This is Radio Free Galaxy. It's time to go.
This is the space age, and we are here to go.
3, 2, 1, 0. Through heaven and earth.
Welcome to Radio Free Galaxy. I'm Travis Lee.
I'm Teen Komar.
I'm constipated.
And this is episode 121 of our podcast, Radio Free Galaxy, this pop culture review podcast that we do. And stay tuned for later on in the show, our other co-host, Trisha Peterson, will be back for a segment. She hasn't been on the show for a while. She's been busy traveling the world with her band, Murder Generation, and doing a lot of shows and stuff like that. So she's back. We will be talking about the new Jeffrey Dahmer Netflix series. I already forgot the name of it. Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, or something like that. Sorry, it's so fucking vague. It's the new Jeffrey Dahmer dramatized and weirdly fictionalized Netflix series that just came out, and everybody's talking about it. Not everybody, but a whole lot of people.
People so, who didn't have to live fucking through seeing it on the news every goddamn day.
Yeah. So I bit the bullet. I watched some of it so I could talk about it with Trisha and Rich. Rich will be on as well. Rich Altenbach is the guitarist and vocalist of Murder Generation, and somewhat of a Dahmer expert, if you ask me, with his project that he's been working on for a couple years, Project 213, I believe it's called, which refers to the apartment number of Jeffrey Dahmer. He's been creating a virtual reality model of Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment basically as it was the day he was arrested. And it's a very difficult thing to do because there's almost no footage. Well, there is no video footage of it, and there are only like 14 crime scene photographs of it. So, yeah. So we'll be talking about that later. It's a tough subject, but, you know, we make it as interesting as possible and talk about some of the inconsistencies that this series weirdly presents. It's very... I don't know. They fictionalized and changed a lot of the details of the story for questionable reasons. I don't know why they did it. So, yeah, we'll talk about that later. But for now, I've got Christine and Adam here, and we're going to recap the now 3 series that we're watching.
3!
We're on episode 6 of The Rings of Power. We're on episode 6 of The House of the Dragon, and episode 4... of Andor.
And so, don't you worry, folks. We have not forgotten about She-Hulk.
No.
We're going to binge watch it and yes. Just do it all in one ridiculously long swoop.
Yep.
We're going to Zack Snyder that shit.
We'll watch it all together and we'll bring it to you. Honestly, dude, I just can't watch another show right now week to week. I would forget all the details of everything. And it's just
I barely remember what's going on right now with the shows we're watching. One more, my brain will just blow up.
I know.
Right.
I'm sitting here right now, like, thinking about which one we're going to talk about first and trying to remember the details of them. So let's talk about The Rings of Power episode 6 first. So what's happened? We're focusing on this group of villagers in the Southlands right now. We got Bronwyn and Arendir and what's his name, Theo, and all them. They're fucking around, waiting for the attack by Adar and the orcs, right?
Yes.
And the orcs get there, and a battle ensues. One of the first battles, really, we see in its breadth in this series so far. Cinematically, very cool. But it's just this storyline, mostly, that's just kind of... for me, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
I don't particularly care for this storyline. It just didn't really do anything for me compared to going against like the hobbits and just other parts of Middle Earth, like with dwarves and stuff. This is just kind of like, okay, it's just okay.
Yeah, it's fine, but there's I like, he's a little too stoic, but I like the character of Arendir. He is, you know, a really good fighter, and I don't know what else to, I'm trying to like think of some things to say about it that are positive, and it's not boring, it's not shit, but I'm just not that interested.
He's an elven fucking warrior, dude. Yeah. He's like, here, let me tell you about my D&D character, bro.
He's ambidextrous.
He hates orcs. He's better than humans at seeing shit. I mean, like, yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. Which isn't to downplay him as, like, an example of an elf or anything like that. It's just that I don't think they've had really a good opportunity to dive into the dude, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
Right. He's not... They didn't... I don't know. I don't think they meant to make him seem so one-dimensional, but, I mean...
Yeah, they try to give him, you know... They try to give him some other dimensions by, you know, showing his love for Bronwyn and, you know, looking after Theo and all this stuff. It starts to break his icy exterior and everything. Right. But, it's just hard with them trying to cover so many storylines all at once in this limited series. But the people of the village, they trick the orcs at first, and they get them in the tower, and they collapse the tower and do the old okey-doke on them. You know what I mean? But then it looks like Adar and his minions have a little okey-doke of their own plan.
Right.
Adar of the hill people.
I think dude just forgets that, like, okay, these orcs are led by a fucking elf.
Right. But one of who's actually one of the first orcs. Or Uruks.
Uruk. Oh god.
Uruks. Uruk.
Okay, Uruk. Well,
that's hard
I
to
prefer
say.
Prefer cheese Danish with cheese in it, but you know what? We don't always get what we want.
Uruks. I can't fuck it. I can't.
Sounds like
it.
Something you do when you fell over something.
Uruk. 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 Okay, anyway. Yeah, so...
Travis, I'm hungry. Pass me some more Uruk.
Uruk, Adam? Uruk?
Sounds like a fucking...
a motorcycle not turning over?
No,
or an engine?
Alaskan husky trying to talk.
Yeah.
Stop putting peanut butter in that poor orc's mouth.
What's the husky trying to say now, Trav? I don't fucking know. He's speaking husky.
Some elven shit. I don't fucking know.
Dude, the first time the black fucking speech. Dog starts speaking elven, I'm like, nope, out.
My cat is speaking fucking black speech, man. Shit.
How metal is that?
Yeah, so that's pretty much the breadth of the episode. The Numenoreans come in, save the day.
Numenor.
Ooh. And so, you know, now they're all the humans are, and Halbrand is, you know, deemed the king and whatever. But you know, and then Galadriel gives herself over to the fire of the, you know, at the end, and you know she's gonna live though. So what's the big cliffhanger? You can't really make a cliffhanger with, you know, an elf that you know is gonna be alive hundreds of years later.
Yeah, well, right. Also you're missing the part of is that one dude put the key in the big stone thingy, yeah. And then the water went down in the holes, and it's like maybe
the
orcs.
Yeah, that was their okey-doke.
Well, maybe the orcs just really wanted to have a water park that that worked, they finally made it happen. I mean, it seemed pretty entertaining. I mean,
yeah,
right,
Uruk world.
Uruk.
Hey, Daddy, can we go to Uruk world?
With their own version of, like, fucking movie or something.
Yeah, right.
Big Uber head, just orc, just out there, like, you know, trying to greet you and bop you on the head with his big foam gangly fingers.
Yeah, right. So.
Can I get an Uruk burger?
Uruk? I can't say it. Without, like, sounding ridiculous.
Dude, I really want to see a husky just, like, be brought in to just do that for us.
Uruk.
Right.
That's a beautiful idea. I'm going to put it in my storybook.
Right. Let me call my buddy Tyler up. He's got a husky.
Yeah. So that's our recap of the Rings of Power. There's lots of
There's a lot of war, a little bit of story.
Yeah.
There's some geothermic activity going on because somebody opened the floodgates.
Yeah. Bronwyn got shot with an arrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She lived.
They didn't heal it with King's Foil for a change.
No, for a change.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so that was that. Let's get to Andor. Andor this week.
Okay. What happened in that?
not a lot.
Well, it wasn't the last time, so I mean.
Okay, yeah. Wait. I gotta remember.
Really fucking picked up, man.
I gotta switch my brain from House of the Dragon from Ring of Power.
We haven't
even
gotten House of
the
Dragon.
I know, but I'm saying I gotta switch it out.
Okay, so we learned that, you know, a lot of people are undercover, so we're getting to the meat of who is running the rebellion right now. So you have Stellan Skarsgård's character, who is apparently lives on Coruscant, and is in disguise there as some kind of art dealer at a gallery, right? Whatever, some kind of dealer of artifacts. And Mon Mothma shows up, and, you know, because you know she would. And she's still a senator at this point.
Fabulous outfit, too, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
Always.
But Mon Mothma shows up, so apparently they're secretly in league with one another. And they're the ones pulling the strings at the top right now, as far as the rebellion goes. We see the Empire. What's the name of the security?
The ISB.
The ISB, right. That whole aspect of the ISB and, like, the meetings and stuff and all the lieutenants and stuff, that was actually kind of cool, Adam. I like that.
I did, and I like the dude who was, like, I don't think he's the overall director of the ISB, but, like,
yeah,
that dude himself, though, he was just, like, you know, like, we're not an intelligence organization, we're a healthcare organization. Like, that's pretty fucking slick of an analogy.
It is.
I like his spin on this, but when it boils down to it, they're fucking spies.
Yeah, they're spies. And he's very imperial. Mm-hmm. And like, I love the attitude of the lieutenants, like, going at each other and their ambitions. And, I mean, it's all very imperial, and I love it.
But very by the book.
Yes, Imperial. That's
yeah,
what,
I'm
that's
just saying,
I
like,
mean.
Just very, very by the book. Like, oh, if you don't give me this thingy, I'm going to do this thing. It's like, oh, well, I outrank you. And it's like, well, I'm going to this other rank. Harumph.
Yeah.
But all like, much more eloquent than what I said.
Yeah. Right. And I like that the one lieutenant is trying to go by the book.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, but she's going by the book using it as a weapon. You know, like, here we go. Like, hi, I'm lawfully evil.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Do you think that maybe, because I got the impression that she was actually undercover working for the rebellion. Do you get that impression that that might be a possibility at all?
Nope.
No?
No. I just think she's ambitious.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know that she's ambitious. I think that she might actually just really believe in what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And think that she's got, like, a legitimate lead, which she pretty much does.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to actually become a rebel because of the bureaucracy that's hindering her.
Yeah. Hmm. I didn't think about it that way, but yeah, she could. There's something more to her. There's something more to her, right. to her past motivations or something, or what she's going to become, or possibly even that she's undercover for somebody or something else, or who knows at this point. But there's that character, I like that character a lot, and her opposite that she was going against too was cool too.
Yeah. Hey, Christine, do you have the IMDb's up?
I do not, but I can get them up.
Yeah.
Check out the chick who's in charge of the, I guess, strike team or whatever, or the infiltration team.
Oh, her, right, yeah.
Yeah, because I think she's the waif from Game of Everybody Gets Naked.
Oh, was she in that? Yeah.
Yeah, basically yeah. Like this. I hate saying this, but like you know, when you hear it, it'll make sense, Travis.
Yeah.
Like Evil Rachel.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. I was looking at her when she when Andor gets placed into her cell, I guess you would say, by Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She looked really extremely familiar, so I don't know. It's not gonna be under top cast.
Yeah.
You have to look at all cast.
You could just look at the episode cast.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
she's not doing that. So Andor gets placed into this cell. Of course, nobody in the cell wants to take him in because they've been planning for this job where they're going to steal the quarterly payroll of an entire sector of the Empire, basically, right? And, yeah, so they don't want him in. He's got to gain their trust, you know, and it's kind of one of those little heist movie kind of tropes. But I'm sure we're going to get some good heist action either in the next episode or after that. So, you know, that's pretty much the entire episode. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So not you didn't find her name, did you?
I can't figure it out.
Okay.
I just wanted the episode. I can't figure it out. All
right. So, you know.
Anyway.
I apologize for the clicking.
Anyway.
The clicking. Clicking.
Clicking. Lots of clicking. Looking for a name. Looking, looking. Nope, that's not it.
Well, I don't know how to look
Let's
it
move on to the House of the Dragon until we find that name. So, episode 6 of the House of the Dragon. We're jumping forward 10 years in time. So a lot of the cast members have, some are still the same. A lot of the adult cast members are still the same with, you know, slightly more aged looks to them. And all of the teenagers and children have been upscaled with older actors. And nearly everyone in nearly every woman in this episode is either pregnant or in the middle of 3 pregnancies or
dying during pregnancy.
Yeah, this is very much a pregnancy centered episode.
I hate
the show.
It so much.
Mm.
They just come out with it right out the gate. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to eat pasta right now.
Yeah, don't ever try to eat while watching House of the Dragon or...
Fuck. No, yeah, dude.
It's a bad decision. It starts off with that birth scene of Rhaenyra. She's having, apparently, her 3rd child that doesn't have white hair.
Nope.
Because she's actually screwing the captain of the guard and... Not
captain
her.
Of the city guard.
Yeah, the captain of the city guard, right.
Totally
and,
expecting
the gold cloaks.
3-headed baby from her, like, you know, uncle, but nope.
No. I was expecting it to, like, when she's having birth, and I'm like, oh, whose baby is this? And then you see them all with, you know, brown hair, dark hair, and it's like, oh, jeez, Rhaenyra.
Rhaenyra.
But yeah, in this time jump, you've seen so many of the characters. Still nothing?
I can find it on there, okay?
Her name is Faye Marseille, and yes, she did play the waif in Game of Everybody Gets Butt Naked.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yes.
All
right. So,
thank you, Adam.
Evil Rachel.
Okay. And so... people's attitudes have changed a lot. like, ever since Allison's father was dismissed as Hand of the King, she's taken on a completely different demeanor to her, where she's started to really be the queen with her own ambitions and pulling the strings behind the scene as much as she can, because she's trying to set up Aegon as best as she can. Her father, Otto Hightower, told her when he was dismissed from court, basically, that either look out and try to make Aegon the next ruler, or you better cling to Rhaenyra's side, because Aegon's in danger of being murdered, basically. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, pick which path you're going to do, but do something. Do right. something.
You've chosen to totally ignore the fact that I've been trying to help you.
Right. Yeah, like, so... go ahead.
Plus, the king's only half there.
Right. So, at the end of the last episode, we were wondering if he had died or not, and apparently not. He's had an arm amputated, it appears, even though we don't mention it. You just see him with a floppy sleeve.
floppy sleeve.
Well, right. And the weird thing is like, the maester who attends to him now is the same maester, at least it appears to be, who suggested, like, hey, why don't we try this other thing for... Nope. We're gonna leech him.
Yeah.
Nope. Like, okay. Maybe if they would have listened to dude back in the day.
Yeah. Well... He still managed to make it another fucking 10 years. I don't know how.
Give him a hand.
Yeah. thanks, Christine.
You're welcome.
I can't get past. Yeah. So that's the story going with him. He's really. I mean, he's still involved with like the politics of everything right now, but a lot of people are pulling his strings. And let's get to Daemon and what's going on with Daemon now. It appears that he's started a full-on family. He has two daughters of his own and a third on the way. He seems to have completely mellowed out in the last 10 years. And
found some peace.
I don't know if he found peace, but he seems to be just running. And I don't know what... necessarily incited that kind of move the opposite direction for how ambitious that he was when we last saw him. Like, what is the inciting incident that made him do such a complete, you know, 180 turn?
I'm sure they'll explain in some story time tale.
Think so? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. But he's totally just basically hiding... and running away now and wanting to go live in the other kingdom. I always get the kingdoms of Westeros all mixed up. I can't remember the Hightowers from the fucking Lannisters. And who owns the Stepstone? I don't. The fuck I know. but lease or something. So, I don't know. They're offering him a castle and all that, and he's thinking about taking it. But now that, you know, spoilers, now that, you know, his wife basically...
toasted herself.
Committed Dracarys on herself. Yeah. Dracarys. worst case of suicide I've ever seen. Thank you. you can just say it. You don't have to point at it to me. The microphone's there for you as well.
I was trying to do the Mad Libs. No.
Okay, what is it?
Pentos.
Pentos, thank you. Wherever the fresh that maker. Is. That makes that might mean something to some of you, but it means absolutely nothing to me. It's one of the minor kingdoms or whatever.
We got like Westeros. Three different maps of things I'm trying to remember in mythological worlds. I don't remember jack
fucking
shit.
Pentos, whatever. So Daemon, you know, his wife, she couldn't deliver the child, and so Daemon seemed to not want to, did he not make a decision what to do about the baby?
Yeah, he didn't make a decision, so instead of getting her all sliced and diced with a side of chili and fries, she just decided to go make a personal barbecue of herself, which, like, fuck, dude. She somehow snuck off from all the midwives and stuff to go walk down to the beach to go find her dragon. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that sucks. Being a woman sucks in this world. And this entire episode just makes me, just hates it.
Yeah.
I hates it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, so some...
It's kind of interesting that the dragon was like, what? Nah, can't be bothered.
Well, I mean...
Nah, I kind of don't want to.
Well, I was kind of thinking the dragon was going to bond with her or something, and then maybe they'd bring the baby together, like, through some kind of dragon powers. But he's like, okay, you're annoying me.
And then
toast.
The dragon was like, all right, man, you sure? All right.
Basically, okay. Yeah, he wasn't going to do it. He wasn't going to do it. I mean, he's the biggest and the oldest of the dragons in Westeros, and, you know, I mean, he's ultra-intelligent and wasn't going to do it. And, you know, I mean... And then he really, I guess, you know, the dragon knows the heart of its rider. And eventually, you know, subconsciously, right. She spoke to him and said that this is what she really wants, you know, and he understood and felt obligated to go through with it, you know. So it's kind of a sad scene, but I mean, I don't know. I guess, you know, don't marry Daemon. Okay, I guess that's the real long story. Don't marry Daemon Targaryen.
Just don't be a woman in this world.
Don't
be
a woman,
just fine.
For sure. But also don't marry Daemon Targaryen. It'll only end bad for you, whether it's by his hand or not. So I'm sure he'll take on another lady wife. We'll see.
Spin the wheel.
Might be his niece. You never know.
I don't know. She might spit out a few more the way it's going.
Yeah, so let's get to Rhaenyra.
I don't think she is going to spit out a few more.
I didn't expect her to spit out three, but somehow she did that.
Well, yeah, but now she lost her baby daddy. Spoilers.
Well, she can always get a new one.
She can always get a new one, right.
She didn't lose him. He's just kind of like, go back to your fucking family homestead, jackass.
Go home.
Yeah.
That's what you get for fucking with one of the Kingsguard.
Yeah.
Which was like, you know, for not actually having... I mean, I guess that being Kingsguard is title and position, but, like, for not really being all that, like, highly placed, he was this, like, checkmate bitch.
Yeah. What are her ambitions now? I don't know. She's trying to protect her name, protect her sons. I don't know what she's trying to pull off by having these kids with brown hair. I mean, what are we, like... Everybody knows, right? But nobody can say anything.
Wants to say it, yeah, right.
You know, I mean, everybody knows. Everybody in the kingdom knows. So, okay. Like, who is, like, Rhaenyra acts like she's so earnest and she's so honest a lot of times and is really, like, the biggest liar and schemer in this whole thing. But I don't know what her end goal is except to just serve her own set of wants and needs and values. I don't, it's all very selfish to me, and I mean, that goes for Game of Thrones in general. Everybody's always after their own ambitions in Game of Thrones. Especially, we'll get to Larys, but, like, he's definitely after something. But, I just don't understand what her motivation is other than to protect the line of succession through her and then her son Jace, right?
Yeah.
Jaceres or whatever his name is. Jace, Jaceres, whatever. Yeah. And then we have Larys Strong still messing around, and he looks like he's angling himself to be... I thought maybe he was going after wanting to be the Hand... The next Hand, after his father.
But why? That puts you way too out in the open and exposed. Why would you do that to yourself, you know?
Right. So, I think he might be going after wanting to marry the queen after Viserys dies. Do you think that's a possibility?
That could be. I mean, he is...
Well, you gotta think of the line of succession. The king dies, she does not become...
Mm-hmm.
The region.
Right. She does not. But the way that he schemes, The way that he schemes and we right, see...
But he can... See, but that's just it. Like, okay, so king dies.
Right.
Queen is now no longer the queen.
Right.
Well, she's
still the queen.
Right up until succession happens, and then she's not. And then, so she then is at the mercy of her stepdaughter,
right,
who can tell her flat out, you're not allowed to get married again.
I'm sure
it's part of Westerosi law.
Yeah.
And if it's not, that would be shocking, because you know what? If she wants to get married, it's in direct violation of what she's been told.
Right.
Which I would expect to happen.
Yeah.
Because why would you allow her to, we used to be friends, so.
Yeah.
You see how much that's doing either of them any good.
Yeah. So, he's angling clearly for something.
Right.
That symbol that he's got on his cane and that his brute squad has taken on, that's like a scarab beetle, right?
Yeah.
I saw. So. Yeah. They keep, like, you know, focusing on that, like, it's supposed to mean something to us from the books or something, but he's clearly building some kind of brute squad with these guys with no tongues and...
The condemned.
Yeah. So, I suppose it's, you know, we're supposed to know what that is or whatever.
Nope.
It's supposed to be in reference to something, I don't know. But they all had their... It's basically a espionage type, you know, thing where you just don't want them to talk. And so, I mean, their alternative was either have their heads chopped off or their tongue cut out. So, I mean, what do you do?
Well, I guess you ain't speaking no more.
You ain't speaking no more, you know. Would you take that deal?
They do use, like, a hot blade. So, I mean, it's not like... I mean, don't get me wrong, man. I'm sure it sucks, but...
Yeah. It's not the worst. It's not like chopping off your nuts or anything.
Oh, they haven't gotten to that yet. They did in the first episode of this series. Never mind.
Yeah, never mind.
Never mind. It's off the checklist.
Motherfucker. Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you gild somebody?
Yeah.
So. Chopping off ding-dongs.
Those are misinformed and badly... the facts were few and far between, but that's our catch up on the shows that we've been watching this week. So let's take a break. We're gonna lose Christine and Adam, but I will be back after the break with Trisha and Rich, and we will be talking about Jeffrey Dahmer, the new Netflix series that just came out, Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. I don't know, whatever the hell it's called. You know what it is. You've seen it. It's in your Netflix fucking queue.
Check
your
Netflix.
Previews. You know what I'm talking about. The Evan Peters thing. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned. This episode of Radio Free Galaxy is brought to you by Mr. T's Knuckle Shoes. They're the only brass knuckle shoes on the market for when pitying a fool ain't quite enough. Mr. T's Knuckle Shoes. Get some! Alright, welcome back to the show. And we are joined by our returning, roving, music... correspondent and aficionado of all things serial killer, Trisha Peterson. Trisha,
hey,
welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. I'm sure you're gonna record the intro when I'm not around either. So like, I'm back.
Yes, she's back
for a minute. For how long? Who knows?
Who knows? But it's wonderful to have you back. And we are also joined by I don't know if he'll claim this, but I'm gonna call him this Dahmer expert, Rich Altenbach. I don't know if you would maybe call yourself that, Rich, but considering the project that you're working on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more of an expert on the things that he owned, I suppose. But well read enough on the topic, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And I also should mention that you guys are, again, we have 2/3 of Murder Generation on again. One of these days we're going to get Tom on. He's been elusive and squirrely One of these days we'll get him on. But you guys are 2/3.
That like sums up Tom's entire identity. Squirrely. Right? Am I wrong?
He does ghost parties. He does ghost parties. He does the Irish goodbye really well. But
yeah.
Anyway, we gotta get him on one of these days. Rich, one of the reasons that I said that, you know, you're a Dahmer expert, or at least an expert in his material belongings and his surroundings, is that you've got a project you've been working on for a couple years now, right? Can you tell everyone about it?
Yeah, it's been a couple years. It is right now a CG recreation of Oxford Apartment Number 213. As it was in July of 1991. Mm-hmm. There's only, maybe about a dozen crime scene photos that have been floating around over the years that show the apartment and the layout. And my wife has been helping me on this a lot. But we've been going through and trying to catalog every item that's in there and identify everything down to exact models, exact brands of things. Mm-hmm. That I've then been recreating in CGI software and doing full 3D renders of the apartment that eventually will be used to create a VR app.
Right.
As like a virtual crime scene.
But in the meantime, we have a song called Ambassador, which we use a lot of that footage that Rich recreated along with live footage of ourselves. It's absolutely amazing, and the amount of work that's put in it, like, it really looks like somebody's like walking in that apartment and like walking around and looking at it as it was on that day that, you know, he was caught and all that sort of thing. So you should check it out, Ambassador Murder Generation, shameless plug,
on YouTube. It was where you could find it, and anywhere else where it's located.
Anywhere else? That's kind of it, I think, in the current realm of things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, it's still a work in progress, right?
Oh, yeah. It's eventually I have to abandon making any more progress on it.
Yeah.
But I had a few startling realizations this week going through it where I correctly identified really ridiculous things like the exact brand of barbecue sauce that was on his kitchen table.
Oh, my God.
What sideways cardboard box was in the closet? It's from All Glass Aquariums. Shit like that. It's been getting kind of ridiculous.
Wow, that's amazing. So I got to ask, though, why did you start this project? I mean, of course, there's always a thing, you know, because no one else was doing it, right?
But sure.
What caused you to start doing this labor-intensive, like, dedicated project?
The lame and honest answer is I was just looking to get better at the software, mm-hmm. and wanted a complex enough project that would keep my interest, and I just started on a couple different objects that were in that apartment. I think it was actually my wife who was going through some of the crime scene photos at the time that kind of piqued my interest and made me think, oh, maybe I could attempt something like that.
Right.
And once I started on it, I just kept trying to improve on it and got better at my 3D modeling, better at my texture creation and material handling, just getting everything to kind of come to fruition. And eventually I hit a point where I had the whole like rough structure of the apartment. Also, I just wanted to see in VR how small that place actually was.
Right.
Because that's something that's kind of lost on the photos, is people don't really realize how tiny that damn place was. And knowing what all happened in there, it's just astonishing to think about. And that gave me a better sense of scale and more of a sense of immediacy.
I think it's really apparent in this series, though. When they show the scenes in the apartment in this series, kind of how small it is, you get like this very, just the way they film it, the cinematography and the spatial aspects of what's on the screen in this series, the way that they did it, you really do feel kind of a little claustrophobic.
Oh, very.
In there, right? I mean, very, like, very. Especially that first, like, the whole first episode, man, you kind of feel trapped in there with them, and it's frightening. Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know, you know, we do this, we have a pretty intimate relationship with this case. All three of us are from the Milwaukee area. And not only that, but all three of us went to high school together. And we went to high school together in the early 90s, a mere three blocks away.
It was technically six blocks because it was okay. three blocks west and three blocks south, right?
Okay, right.
Yes, yeah. 25th Street, and yeah. It was like just north of
yeah. So it, like, maybe five blocks. It yeah. It was in walking distance. Like we could like we kind of all skipped school and went to the demo day of right. the Oxford apartments. Like that was kind of the thing. But
yeah,
and I'm 1 year older. Actually, the year that I started high school was 1991, and this right. like he was caught, and this was all discovered right. at the end of July of 91. And then I'm like, I was like going into orientation like within 2 weeks of this happening,
yeah.
and I was like over there like yeah. as like this crime scene was like unfolding, and my mom did drive us over there because we were just like, what the fuck, it's like right here.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of weirded out, like that, like I'm going to high school like right by where this like fucking serial killer was caught. So like you couldn't help like being that close at any given point, even like when you guys came in here, like because it kind of never really stopped for a while.
No.
And like you like kind of like were, it was just kind of weird just knowing like that was like right there. Just right. like this dude was like right there.
Right.
And you know, and then we all knew people that were associated, you know, with like victims and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And it's just, yeah. So it kind of like hits us maybe a little different than right. a lot of people. And we just inherently know a lot about it because
it was local news. It wasn't just news. It was yeah. local news. So long after the buzz had worn off nationally, we were still dealing with it here on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been 31 years now. And yeah. I mean, people are still in the city traumatized by it. There's still people that haven't gotten over it. There's still people, you know, affected by this whole thing. So
so I've actually now watched this twice, and I'm yeah. like my opinion has actually changed tremendously about this. There was a lot of like, there's been a lot of talk about like how, like, I didn't know that the victims' families weren't contacted for this. They had no idea this was coming out. That's, to me, that's a little troublesome. Also, they took a lot of liberties, like, even with the victims and, like, portrayals. And I understand they're, like, trying to tell a certain story, but I'm not. That's, I guess, where my issue became. I'm like, right. are we trying to understand him better? Are we trying to, like, what kind of story are we trying to, are we trying to paint a different, like, what picture is this painting? What do you think, Rich?
I was definitely not meant to give anybody any actual like knowledge of the case or the things that happened, because they took so many liberties.
Well, they took a lot of liberties. I realized that the second go.
Right. But to get to your first point about the victims' families not being contacted at all, what makes that really like burn is the fact that they make multiple references in the series to people profiting off of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here, and they're saying that in a show where they're profiting off of this, like, that's a little fucked up.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bitter pill to swallow, I'm sure.
Especially since this was kind of promoted as a point of view, like giving the victims some kind mm-hmm. of, that's the way I kept seeing the promotion for it. They were like, well, you're going to see a perspective from the victim's point of view and the victim's families, and it's not necessarily just going to be about Dahmer. And I don't see that at all.
Definitely not. Most screen time is spent on pretty much a fictional character. But even when they did deal with the victims directly, they changed the story in a way that paints them in a more negative light. I mean, the big one there was the whole thing with Conorak,
yeah.
Painting it where as if he knew who Dahmer was,
I know.
Which his family shielded him and the rest of their family from anything. They didn't know what Dahmer looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They weren't even there during the trial for when he was sexually abusing, you know, his brother.
Yeah.
They weren't even there for that.
Right.
So there's no way that he knew who he was. Mm-hmm. And to paint it, like, to frame it where he knows him, it's like, oh, wow, so you're making this guy into a complete fucking moron.
Yeah.
Well, that's some bullshit. So that was, that really bothered me.
It bothers the shit out of me, too. It's exploitive as hell.
Yeah.
Actually, the biggest, and this, I mean, this is also related to the Conorak thing, because Glenda Cleveland was the one that kept calling the cops or whatever about the Conorak boy. That's, like, undisputed. That actually happened.
Can I clarify that statement?
I was going to say, but she's not the neighbor.
No, she didn't even live in the same building. She never met him.
But I thought she was the aunt of the girl that, like, you know, like, actually, yes. Like, she wasn't the one that found him. Like, the girls found him.
Her niece told her about it. And she's like, well, let me call up to follow up. So she made one phone call to the police looking for any more information, any kind of follow-up information, because the kid looked like a child.
Yeah.
And that part where they show, like, this is an actual phone call, that is the only part involving her that is accurate. So it was one phone call she made. One.
Yeah.
One.
And they put her in this series as a main character, as his next-door neighbor, which his next-door neighbor was actually that Pamela Bass. And, like...
Yep.
And I was like, when I rewatched it, I was like, wow, this is really weird that they're, like, combining. It's like what you said. You said it. I was like, we talked about this separately, and I was like, you're right. I was like, this is super weird, because I was like, she was not that person at all, and it was a completely separate individual. Well, Pamela Bass was. I mean,
they gave her.
Why would they do that?
Her 7 episodes, which is insane. And one episode was completely about her, to the point where you have. I don't want to get too deep into the woods on this one, but it's an absurd choice. But I'm guessing from a storytelling point of view, they needed somebody to be a protagonist here.
Yeah.
Because there really isn't one, and the only one that would make sense to me would have been Tracy Edwards.
Yeah.
But because of everything he was involved with later in his life, I'm sure they didn't want to make him a protagonist, because... he doesn't really have a squeaky clean history at this point either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
you know what? You can like kind of shove that off as he was traumatized and he was suffering from PTSD and he never recovered and then you know, he ended up in situations like, I don't know, man. You could have made him. I really think he could have been. He should have been the protagonist. Like, the fact that they made her such a dominant character. In like, all of that is actually, it's not coming from her. It's like, it's not that it's completely false. It's just, like, it wasn't her. It was, like,
well,
they took,
but
like...
it is completely false.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's completely false. Like, Pamela Bass was friends, casual friends with Dahmer.
Yeah.
They weren't, like, particularly close, but they'd go over to each other's apartment and hang out for a bit.
Yeah.
You know, nobody in the building ever thought he was committing any... like, nobody thought there was murder going on. Right. In that apartment. Nobody called the police about anything like that.
No, see, I read, though, that it wasn't necessarily that they were calling the police, that there were a lot of complaints to the land or the building manager about the smell. Like, everybody did complain to the building manager about the smell. Not the cops,
right.
But the building manager.
Yeah, Princewell got a couple phone calls about the smell, but it was never like, this guy's killing people in here. Like, which is ridiculous. I mean... that's a whole nother aspect with this. Like, when it was first being promoted, when they first announced it over a year ago that the series was going to be made, everything I read focused mainly on it showing how many times he evaded the police, how many times he should have been arrested, mm-hmm. which is very true. I mean, we all know the stories there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, right from the first, in 78 in Ohio, like, you know, gets pulled over drunk with, you know, with dead remains in a bag in his backseat, and they let him go.
Yeah.
Like, so many times he could have been caught. Yeah. But it's not... how can I word this? You don't need to exaggerate the ineptitude of the police or them turning a blind eye.
No.
Mm-hmm. They turned a blind eye mainly because you're dealing with
I don't even know if it was because they were people of color. I think it was more because they were part of, you know, the LGBTQ.
Yeah, that's the biggest part community. Of it because
that's actually the biggest part. It's not actually the, I mean,
they turned obviously such a blind
the systemic
eye
racism that like exists on that side of town is certainly like fucking ridiculous. But
the, to this day.
The, well, but the homophobia, listen, the homophobia is the fucking kicker.
Right.
Well, it kind of cuts both ways because it's like the racism that's inherent in it makes them want to listen to this white man versus a black woman. Mm-hmm. But right. Then the flip side of that same coin is once they find out he's gay, they're like, okay, you go do whatever you're doing behind closed doors.
Yeah, like
we don't want to know.
We want to wash our hands of this as quickly as possible.
And that's one thing that my wife mentioned to me that, because she's been reading a lot on like Reddit about this series and getting people's reaction to it. And the younger demographic of people watching it who didn't grow up during that time period, they don't understand how integral homophobia was in the system at that point. People ask, like, well, why aren't they called? Why aren't they getting the cops to go to the bathhouse if he's drugging people? It's like, dude, the bathhouse owners would never want that. They'd be shut down in a heartbeat.
Right.
It was like it was a silent understanding, a silent agreement. Like, we know you're breaking a lot of laws by having this establishment, but you know what? We don't want to know about it. Do it behind closed doors. Don't do it anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It'll keep all of you people.
Yeah, this
in
isn't
one area. It'll
this isn't it. LA or New York or anything. This is fucking Milwaukee.
It's the fucking Midwest. Yeah.
In 1991, mm-hmm. You know, it's a very different perspective, and you know, whether it's true or not that he did it or not, you can see Dahmer using in this series, at least we're just talking about this series, not necessarily what's the truth or whatever, but you can see him using that, you know, he's sly enough to know that's like his first card that he goes to, you know, when he's confronted by the cops is, you know, it's just a gay thing. He knows that they're not going to want to deal with it.
Exactly.
That's his
I think they handle that really well in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the one scene that really kind of like sold it for me as far as, well, mainly, like, with Evan Peters' acting chops on this one. I mean, beyond the fact that he's doing, like, a very reasonable approximation of what Dahmer was like, with the voice and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, the scene
where
he's confronted.
I heard people argue about his voice, and we'll get back to that.
Sure. Well, people obviously haven't listened to enough interviews, but
exactly. Well, that's all you gotta say. It's like, dude, that's what he sounded like if you listen to any tapes.
The scene where he is being, like, confronting the cops about Conrad.
Yeah.
The way that scene was written, which is pretty close to every report I've read, it's handled in such a way where he's just so
casual,
calm and casual, and like, it's a completely ridiculous thing he's saying, mm-hmm. but he says it with such believability, and I could see cops who don't want to deal with this mm-hmm. very easily letting that slip by, which is insane. But like, younger people who see that don't really understand why that would happen. Which I guess is a good thing that things have changed enough where, like, a younger demographic won't really understand how cops could ignore all of this. Like, well, good job culture for making baby steps forward. Mm-hmm. But that scene really kind of, like, nailed that really well for me. And I'm like, wow, like, it's no wonder he got away from cops so often. Like,
I want to actually say, like, somebody from a younger demographic was like, can we please stop talking about this racist? And I'm like, and I didn't get into the argument because I was like, man, I'm like, this is a lot to, like, get into. Because they're like, you know, like she's just looking at it from a perspective of all of his victims were mostly people of color. Now, there were actually, I think, like, five victims that were white.
Yeah.
And that had actually nothing to do with how he chose his victims. Obviously, he lived into a underserved area of the community where the cops didn't give a fuck, and you could kind of, like, you know, and that's where a lot of, like, people of color live. But that's also, like, that's what his type was. Like,
he was attracted to that.
He was gay, and he liked a certain physique, which usually people of color, black men, usually had that type of physique, but it doesn't discount that, like, if he saw a white man with that physique or availability or whatever, doesn't mean that they couldn't have just as easily been one of his victims. Which,
well, one thing that popped in my mind with that is also, I mean, there's a reason that bodybuilders put on all that spray tan shit.
Yeah, because it enhances the
the musculature and everything else, which is what he was really into. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense in a lot of ways. He definitely had a type.
Yeah.
I don't think it was racially motivated in like a... Yeah, in that regard.
Oh, no. No, so like when people... But that's also a generational thing where people don't understand. Right. They just look at a white man that killed a lot of people of color and they're just like, go and like, they say, well, he's a racist. I'm like, no. That's what he wanted. That's what he was attracted to. That's what he wanted to be with. And it had nothing to do with that. But
yeah, like, the racial aspect of it is more how the police dealt with things. Right. It's a whole different...
Actually, you know, this is actually one of the first series that actually showed the multiple times that he could have been caught and the failures of the police department and, like, over and over and over. And I was like, that was good to see. But the one thing that I thought was really interesting was to show, because he lived with his grandma for an extended period of time.
Yeah, right.
And actually having a lot of that. Because, like, you know, everybody just kind of, like, dismisses that whole era. Because he did kill, once he killed Stephen Tuomi at the Ambassador Hotel, he did follow that up by killing additional victims at his grandma's house. Mm-hmm. Like three, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was three of them.
Yeah, he killed three in West Dallas or whatever. And it's just like, that's like creepy as fuck where they like show him eating Swanson's TV dinners like with his fucking grandma. Whether or not that actually happened, it really seemed like that could have probably fucking happened.
Oh yeah.
Right. You know, like, that's, you know,
definitely
like
accurate.
Chilling with grandma, like eating Swanson's TV dinner, and like tried, in the meantime. Yeah.
He tried to connect with her because like he really did make an attempt to like try to like he did in prison later, but he tried to kind of turn to religion for a while to try to basically like to, as sick as this, like to not be gay really was the main reason. He was like really trying to repress his homosexuality. And he kind of leaned on her to kind of help with that in a very perverse way.
Right.
But yeah, it was really good to see them explore that relationship because, it is really underplayed in every other fictional account of this that we've seen over the years.
Like, it's like that's like that whole like section is dismissed usually in every storytelling that I've seen so far. Right. So for me, I found that like a little compelling to be like, oh man, you're doing this like... And also I did like the portrayal of like his dad was like not being the greatest dad, because there was like that period of time where Lionel was like, I don't understand, or like all that kind of shit. But it was like, but they show him being like, dude, you kind of like, you were a contributing factor. And they showed a lot of like the fucked up shit that he did in addition to his mom. But there was a lot of fucked up shit that
they did. They really exaggerate the shit out of that though. Like, he did.
You think so?
Yes, oh, very much so. If I can trust anything that I've come across, if I can trust his book, if I can trust any other reports I've heard, like, I mean, Lionel did find a dead animal in the crawl space that they brought out, and that did pique his interest, but it was mainly, like, Jeffrey Dahmer on his own going through and, like, dissecting these animals. His dad wasn't right by his side doing any of this, so that was all made up.
Oh. No, okay. No, I mean, but I'm actually talking about, like, where he fucking, like, his mom left, and then, like, he's gone for, like, 3 months, and nobody fucking bothered. Like, he dismissed him just as much as his mom dismissed him.
Well, they divorced. When they separated, Lionel left because he was basically kicked out of the house by his wife.
Yeah.
So he was going about, you know, I gotta figure out my life now. But, like, the big thing with him being an absentee father, I mean, obviously him leaving at that point, not that he had much of a choice in the matter, like...
Yeah,
it's a
but he still never checked
apart.
In on him. Right. Never checked
but
in on him. Didn't
additional
call.
Additional that was back when he was younger. I mean, it is a known fact that, like, Lionel Dahmer worked a fuck ton of hours. He was not home.
Yeah.
Like, he had very little interaction. And he also, he's not acted accurately in the series enough to really show it. But if you see any footage of him or interviews with Lionel Dahmer, he has, like, even less affect behind him than his son does.
Wow.
Like, there's almost, like, no real emotional weight to his presence.
Right.
And that's gotta do a number on a kid who's already got massive abandonment issues.
I think
you're clinging and you're not finding it.
Absolutely. I think they tried to show that. I think they just, you know, didn't, like, hit it home enough. I mean, especially in that scene, you know, where they show him with the detectives telling him in the... you know, police station that what his son did, and then he stifles the act of stifling sob. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well done.
Yeah,
that was a really good storytelling device, and I like that a lot. But
I think it's really shown too in the acting of, I'm trying to find his name here. Nick Fisher apparently is his name. The kid they had playing Jeffrey Dahmer as a child. Like, by far, for me, that was, like, the standout performance. I don't know where they found this kid, but holy crap. Like, just the shots of him sitting in the hallway when the parents are fighting, just the reaction that he's got, just the expression on his face.
It's just so empty.
Really sells it, and it's just like, wow, so that's empty. Powerful. Which, I mean, that goes to the directors of this, because they had some powerhouses for directors. Jennifer Lynch did four of them.
Yeah.
Greg Araki, when I saw his name pop up in the end credits, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. He's the guy who directed Doom Generation. I don't know if either of you remember that movie.
Yes, I do.
he directed one of the episodes of this, and it was like, I can't remember which episode number, but when I saw his name pop up at the end, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, they had some really great directors behind this who really, from the filmmaking craft point of view,
sure.
Zero complaint. Everything was just... No. Perfect. It was gorgeous.
And let's talk about Evan Peters for a while, because I mean, it's, you know, Evan Peters, and you know, he puts on a absolutely fantastic performance, I think, at least in the show. You know, that really I did not want to watch this. I'm gonna be completely legit with you guys. I'm surprised that I watched any of this. It's not because I want to bury my head in the sand or whatever. It's just that kind of, I lived through this in the city, and I just I have a fascination with the psychology of what makes someone do things like this, but I just really don't want to revisit it. It bothers me. It disturbs me. I'm not big on gore, you know, even in fictional movies. And I just really didn't want to watch it, but, and I gotta be legit with you guys. I did not finish it. I got through, like, I think maybe episode 5, and I just, you know, I couldn't take anymore. That was like it. It was more just me, not necessarily the filmmaking or the story. I couldn't do anymore. It was emotionally just too heavy for me. And, but Evan Peters, man, he really dove into the role, and it's you can see the difference in he was playing like the high school Dahmer and like the adult Dahmer, all the different ages. He was playing them differently. Like, there's more of a humor and still a bit of humanity left in like the high school Dahmer.
Right.
You can see his like sociopath tendencies and everything and all that, like figuring out what. Like, when he sees somebody react to something he does with emotion, and then he, like, mimics it. He, like, mimics it and does it again because he really doesn't know how to understand how to act around people. He just, like, sees that reaction and then, you know, well, you know, they like that. I have to do that again. And then when they don't like it the second time, he doesn't understand, you know.
Right.
It's like that... coming of age of a sociopath or whatever, you know, like his acting in this is like really, really good. And
actually, and it all, you know, and you didn't see the end, but it does actually all come full circle, because something else that they don't actually actively show in most of these Dahmer movies, I guess we're calling them now, is they don't show how he was in prison and the way. The way when he finally, because he wasn't originally in general population, but they kind of like, when they show him in general population, the way he was like fucking with people.
Yeah.
Like, and he was like trying to get away with shit. And like, those, there's legit stories about like, I feel like that's actually how he was in prison. Like, fucking with people.
I remember, you know?
Like,
I remember.
The orange slice thing. Like, I remember reading like other prisoners' accounts of like, him doing that exact shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh. And
I remember in real life hearing that when he was finally killed, when he was killed in prison, I remember hearing that, you know, when he was killed, that he was in general population. I was like, what? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I just... There's people that never make it to general population that have done way less than Jeffrey Dahmer. And the fact that he made his way in the general population, to me, has always been like kind of a conspiracy to me. Okay,
I can put the conspiracy to bed for you.
Okay.
Because he requested that.
Yeah, he asked for
he
that.
He fought to get in.
Yeah, but you know what though? You can request all you want in prison, dude. You can request all kinds of things in prison. They don't grant you.
He has so many narcissistic qualities that he has to feed off of others in some capacity.
Yeah.
Like, he is like I don't think, you know, some people are like, he's just mentally ill. I'm like, I don't think he's mentally ill, but I think he's got some disorders and he's got some problems. And like, one of the things is he's got a lot of narcissistic traits.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of sociopathy and psychopathy where it's like, you need other people to make that like okay in your brain.
Right.
Like
right.
You need people to feed off of, like he needs other people's energy to fucking get him through the day. He can't be by himself. Right. That's why he wanted to be there. It was everybody's like, oh, that was just like a suicide wish. I'm like, no, dude, that was he's not gonna survive if he doesn't have other people to feed off of.
Right.
Like in any capacity. Like he needs that. He needs to fuck with people in some way.
I mean, anybody in charge obviously would have known that he wouldn't be alive for very long after that happened. And that's I mean, even him, even the way he was killed, like that was very much allowed to happen.
Right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know,
which I mean, that's not the most uncommon thing in the world either.
No, it's definitely not. Look, I could talk about this for a little bit longer, but we've only got about 5 minutes left. So, if you guys could, just Rich, let's start with you. Can you sum up your thoughts on this and your recommendations? You should watch this if blank. And you shouldn't watch this if blank. Could you do that for us?
Sure. I would say that if you have a pretty good idea of how these events actually unfolded and can separate the truth from the fiction, watch it. It is very well made.
Yeah.
It's very well acted. It does open up a lot of wounds. It is difficult.
Yep.
And some of it can be downright frustrating. Mm-hmm. But it's worth watching if you already know enough to be able to separate the truth from the fiction and just enjoy it as a work of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I would say don't if... Well, I mean, if you've lived through the story directly and it still affects you in any kind of real way, you might want to avoid it.
Yeah.
For the reasons that you should watch it, oddly enough, it's really well put together, and I think some of the things that are fictionalized might really offend people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I watched it. I don't do well with these kind of things. I don't think it's gonna haunt me or anything. You know, it wasn't traumatic for me or anything, but it was really hard. It was really hard to watch, and at the same time, I was glued to it for a while. You know, like, I did not anticipate that happening at all. And, you know, I thought maybe I would get through an episode or two. And, you know, I'm like, all right, man, I'll fucking throw on an episode of this. You know, I got to talk about it. I'll let Rich and Trisha take it. But then all of a sudden, I'm like on episode 4. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, and I was just sitting there watching in one lump sum. I wasn't like going back to it. I was like, oh my God, I'm still sitting here. Why? Why? Why am I still sitting here?
Like Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with Rich. I'm like, if you're looking for like in like complete accurate portrayal of the events as they occurred, like this is not the thing. 'Cause there's a lot of, things that are out of order or things that are just fictionalized. But if you're also looking for a fill-in-the-blank type of thing, like, you know, like, I'm not saying, like, none of it, like, any of it's accurate, but I do think they do a good job in filling in some details that maybe we all kind of thought about, like the grandma.
Yeah.
Like, that whole scenario is interesting. Yeah, the prison time thing is super interesting. I feel like there's probably a lot of accuracy on there. But if you're, like, looking for, like, an actual, like, detailed play-by-play, you're better off, like, just watching a straight-up, like,
documentary
or whatever. Right. Yeah. And obviously, yeah, you shouldn't watch this if you're easily, not easily, but if there's any sort of these events that affect you in any sort of, you know, you're triggered, like you like lived in this area or like whatever. But also, another reason that you should watch it is because there is a very accurate portrayal of the ineptitude of the Milwaukee Police Department in handling of all of these cases and actually showing how the officers got their fucking jobs back and all that kind of bullshit. One of them actually, that Balzerzak guy, ended up being a police chief in a fucking small town. Like, they all got their jobs back. They all got back pay. They all got all kinds of shit. They owned a pub over on 8th Street where one of my friends bartended. I mean, it's just kind of like... It's kind of bullshit. Like, it's one of the few representations that, like, puts a real, like, spotlight on that sort of thing. So, like, you know, kudos for them, to them, for actually, you know, doing that. But, yeah, if you're looking for, like, 100% accurate representation and, like, this is, like, fucking spot on and money, it's, like, it's fucking not. It's not.
But it's a dramatized portrayal of it. It's pretty good.
I personally think Evan Peters is like one of the best like Dahmer portrayals that I've seen.
Yeah.
I just really think he did an excellent job.
He brought a surprising amount of range to it that I wasn't expecting, because it wasn't just a caricature.
Agreed. All right, guys, we got to wrap it up. I really appreciate you both being on the show to talk about this rather difficult subject, but it's something that everyone's talking about right now. And, you know, rather than just ignore it and, you know, fluff it off, you know, it's good to talk about and deal with. That's how at least I get over trauma and stuff, is by talking it through with friends and people with other perspectives. And so, yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
For sure.
And remember to check out Murder Generation on Bandcamp and on YouTube, and
check out our video for Ambassador on YouTube, which has the CGI rendering of Apartment 213.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very, very cool. So thanks for being on, Rich. It's good talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Trisha, our roving correspondent.
I'll be back more. We're done with shows for the year, so yeah, I'll be back more.
It's cool. All right, and so this has been episode 121 of Radio Free Galaxy. Please remember to leave us a rating on the Spotify app or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and that's about it. And check out our YouTube page. Look for Radio Free Galaxy on YouTube. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.